You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, now available on iTunes. Hit the subscribe button and never miss an episode. We are also available on Audio Boom and Mixcloud, while Android users can find us on Pocket Casts and Podcast Republic. Enjoy the show and thanks for listening.
You're all very welcome to episode 14 of Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Thanks for joining us again this week, ladies and gentlemen. I'm joined in studio once again by my co-host, John Breyer. John, you made your managerial debut at the weekend.
I did, Kieran. Thanks yet again for bringing it up after you did there on Facebook Live. Shall I get the excuses out of the way?
Yeah, please.
There was about five players I had. I'd never seen them play before. We were up against last year's champions. We scored the best goal of the game.
Maybe, have you considered, you could be like Stephen Bradley, maybe your training sessions are too intense, your matches against each other are too good.
Exactly, that must be it, yeah. But we did score the best goal of the game, cracking free kick from near the byline, just belted it in, and I'm taking all the credit for it. I said to the lad, go on, have a go, and he went in. So, but lost 8-1.
So, coming up on the Vidi printer as 8. But down to the serious stuff, John, another cracking show lined up for the folks this week. We're joined by Paddy Kavanagh of Bohemians. Bulls are still in the hunt for Europe, believe it or not. So we're going to speak to Mr. Kavanagh about that. We're going to be joined by Mark Hill. The name may not ring a bell, but I'm sure when I say FM Ireland to you, that name will ring a bell. He's going to join us. Mark has been involved with Waterford this season, but obviously John, myself, huge FM players here. So we're going to speak to him about the Football Manager franchise. Sean Doyle, St. Pat's fan, he joins us. Pat's still banging trouble, but a huge win over Shamrock Rovers on Monday night may turn things around for them. We're going to be joined for the first time on the podcast by a Women's National League player. Jenny O'Keefe of Wexford Utes is going to join us after some huge controversy in the Women's National League at the weekend. We'll be talking to her about that and women's football in general. And finally, Dan Gorman's going to pick up his hat-trick ball, his third appearance on the podcast, and we're going to speak to him about Bray Wanderers. But get yourself a cup of bovril, folks. Sit down and relax. And this is episode 14 of the Between the Stripes LOI podcast.
Okay, so the reason we mentioned the bovril was that Kieran's just had his first mug of bovril. I noticed on Facebook your girlfriend was saying she'd had a cup of bovril and a steak pie at a Stirling Albion game.
Yeah, right? Taken in Stirling Albion.
Yeah, and you said you never had one, so I've made him a cup of bovril. And what's the verdict, Kieran?
Yeah, unbelievable. I can't. My life has changed. I'm going to be dropping the cans on the way it is. It's all about the bovril now, folks. But cracking on, John, we're going to start tonight's show by looking at the Premier Division results from the weekend.
Okay, Kieran, well, there's no place better to start with than at the Marketsfield, where Limerick beat Cork 2-1. Toasty goal and a great free kick there from Shane Tracy.
Yeah, I think fair to say one of the surprises of the season, considering Limerick's predicament going into the game. They look to be in real relegation trouble, but this result now has really turned things around for them. I have to say, John, it was one of, if not the most enjoyable League of Ireland game I've watched this season. Huge high intensity, but great quality at the same time. To watch Albeni in action was absolutely superb. He simply tore apart his former club. While on the other side of the coin, Kieran Sadler in the first half, an absolutely dazzling display from the former Sligo man. He forced Limerick into a half-time change, which may have raised a few eyebrows at the time. Young Barry Cotter went off. Dean Clark came on at fullback. He's played there a couple of times this season for Limerick, but it wouldn't be his natural position, John. So I think a lot of people probably thought Sadler would have a lot of joy again in the second half. But after a couple of shaky moments in the first few minutes of the second half for Clark, he was one of the best players on the field and in that second half. Also have to mention Bastian Henry for Limerick. He simply controlled the game in midfield. He was superb. You can see that he's played at a higher level before. And what a finish from Tosi in the first couple of minutes. And what a sublime free kick from Shane Tracy, just coming a couple of days off the back of his testimonial. So a real fairy tale win there for Limerick. And they'll obviously be hoping to repeat that in the Cup semi-final.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about this lad Ogbeni, because he's impressed me all season. He's really putting himself in the shop window. You think a move to England at the close season?
Maybe not this season, John. He, as I mentioned on last week's show, he gave an interview where he said he wants everyone to know his
name.
He's
ambitious, Kieran.
Yeah, he wants everyone in the League of Ireland to know his name.
Yeah.
And with performances like that, if he can replicate that week in, week out next season, there's absolutely no doubt that the scouts will be flocking to the Marketsfield.
And disappointment for Cork?
Yeah, and obviously we'll go on to speak about Monday night's late disappointment for them, but regardless of that, they're still going to wrap the title up. This was a very, very poor performance on Friday night from Cork City. It does raise questions over you know, obviously Shawnee Maguire, a lot of the success is going to be down to him. That mightn't be fair considering, you know, Cork have such a great strong back four, but that's what the critics will say. And Friday night obviously will be another spanner in the works in terms of that. But as I said, Cork are going to wrap it up, but this was a huge win for Limerick in terms of surviving in the Premier.
Massive. Team in second place, Dundalk, did their faint title hopes no harm with a 3-0 win in the Louth derby against Drogheda.
Yeah, and the interesting thing for this, Stephen Kenny was confident enough to rest a number of key players ahead of the game. Michael Duffy was rested, I think McElhenney was rested. So a lot of key players were rested. Kinsella Starrett, I think it was only maybe his 7th start of the season, something a low number like that, and he got the opening goal in the game with a tap in after what was a good save from Stephen McGuinness. Despite an awful season for Drogheda, he's looked one of the rare, I suppose, shining lights in that team. That came after Stephen O'Donnell header. Again, Stephen O'Donnell hasn't started many games this year for Dundalk, so that was a sign perhaps that Stephen Kenny felt the 3 points were always going to be in the bag in this one, as Dundalk focused on that huge Monday night game down in Turner's Cross. Second goal was a looping header from Dave McMillan as he continues to chase down Shawnee Maguire's 20 goal record in the league this season. Thomas Byrne then, I'm not sure if you've seen it, John, a hilarious red card is all I can describe it as. Drogheda had a free kick in their own half. Thomas Byrne went to take a short free kick and ended up tapping the top of the ball. Obviously he couldn't touch it again. He was waiting for one of his teammates to come and rescue him. Nobody came and rescued him. Dundalk player ran onto the ball, went on a blazing run down the wing. Thomas Byrne just hacks at him. Second yellow card, off he went. Really, for me, it sums up what has been a horrendous season for Drogheda. And then Michael Duffy exposed that open space then with the red card, and he got a wonderful third goal as he curled it into the bottom corner. 3-0 win for Dundalk, and more embarrassment for Drogheda.
Yeah, they can't wait for the season to be over now at this stage, can you? I mean, and if a sending off ever summed up a team's performance this season, that was it. Moving on, impressive victory for Bowes, 3-2 against St Pat's, who are still in relegation trouble.
Yeah, so the opening goal in this one came, Kavanagh beat two men, and we're going to be speaking to Paddy Kavanagh shortly. He beat two men down the wing and put in a great cross for Akinade. We spoke so much this season about the importance of Akinade and Corcoran in that team, and Akinade were the opening goal there while Corcoran would go on to score later on. A howler from Shane Supple then, something we're not used to seeing, the Bohemians goalkeeper letting Christy Fagan shot under his body for the equaliser. But that was as good as it got, I'm afraid, for St. Pat's. Akinade was dragged down by Gavin Piers inside the penalty area. I've seen a bit of debate on this decision. A lot of people, obviously, with the new rules this season, you know, double jeopardy is gone. But that's only if the player makes an honest attempt to win the ball. Gavin Piers put a rugby tackle in on Akinade. Yeah. Straight red card. Corcoran scored the penalty. And then Pat's, through their own overplaying, I suppose is the word for it, they lost possession on the edge of their own box, and Corcoran with an absolute humdinger of a finish curling it into the top corner. Conan Byrne got a consolation goal there to bring it to 3-2, but at that stage Pats looked to be in real trouble. But obviously we'll speak about their result Monday night shortly. But before we do that, I'm going to introduce you to Bohemians player Paddy Kavanagh, who we spoke to earlier on. So I'm joined on the show now by Bohemians winger Paddy Kavanagh. Paddy, you're very welcome to the podcast. So, Paddy, for a long time this season, I think it's fair to say, despite a great season for Bowes, you may be slightly looking over your shoulder. But in recent weeks, a great run of form, 2 wins in a row, undefeated in your last 3. And now, all of a sudden, you find yourself 3 points off 4th place. The simple question here, Paddy, is a European place possible now for Bohemians Football Club?
There's a hint of Europe. Can't shy away from that. But, like, until we're mathematically safe, the European thing is just... it's just in the back of our minds. Safety is still key. Until we're mathematically safe, that's where our priority lies.
So I suppose the old cliche, Paddy, of one game at a time is the way you're looking at things at the moment.
Sure, that's all you can do. You're only as good as your last game. You can only play your next game. So, but we've got Sligo in a week and a half time or whatever. That's where the focus will be. If we can pick up 3 points up there, we'll be doing well. And down to results around us then, in terms of the whole European setup, you know.
While it's probably the players and the management's jobs, I suppose, to look at one game at a time, from a podcasting point of view, I need to look ahead here. And your next fixtures coming up, you've got Sligo, Cork, Dundalk and Harps. So it's obvious to say Sligo are going to be fighting for their lives at the moment. Cork are going to be coming to Daly Mount looking to win the title. But then, does that perhaps maybe make things easier when you face Dundalk? They know the title's gone. Will they maybe be slightly off their game that day? Could that be a big part in your running?
Well, without doubt, not Dundalk. I don't think Dundalk tend to lose focus all that often. The way Stephen Kenny has them drilled, like, you know what Stephen Kenny's like, he's managed down along Rodney, so he's good at keeping the team focused and hungry, and they'd be upset having possibly lost the title this year. Well, it's as good as gone, in my opinion, anyway. Like, I don't think they're going to get it, so Dundalk's never an easy game.
Yeah, and then the final game of the season comes at home against Finn Harps, obviously another side that's going to be battling for their lives.
Yeah, exactly. We don't know what way things will pan out come the last game of the season. Harps always giving us a tough game, like, you know, so and Haggerty and whatchamacallit,
Ollie Horgan.
Ollie Horgan will have well drilled.
And speaking of great managers, obviously Keith Long, has done an absolutely fantastic job with Bowes this season. Would it be fair to say he's a manager of the year contender?
Possibly, yeah, because if you consider everyone at the start of the year probably had us in there in the tree to go down, and a lot of people had written us off, I think, you know, and to be fair to Keith, he put together a squad, brought in a lot of bodies, a lot of young blood there as well. He's managed to get us to gel, and I think the last few weeks you're starting to see the rewards of what he's been trying to do, you know. So definitely I think his name should be in the mix anyway.
And in the last couple of games we've really seen Dinny Corcoran and Ishmael Akinade come to the fore. It must make your job so much easier when you have two players like that to aim for every week.
Oh, when you're playing with Dinny, Dinny's like one of the best finishers in the league. Unbelievable. I always say to him, I'm so happy when you're in that final position where you're about to shoot, because 9 times out of 10 he's hitting the target or scoring. I'm so happy. Izzy's had a tough year in terms of getting his fitness back and whatever, and he's such a good outlet for us, you know. He's pace and power to beat the band there, and once he starts running a defender, and there's no stopping him. And the same when you put the ball in the box, you put it into a good area, the big guy's going to attack it and he'll get on the end of it. He turns bad balls into good balls nearly, you know, that kind of way. One of them centre forwards.
Yeah. And we've certainly seen those two players and yourself, you got an assist in the win over St Pat's 3-2 victory. That must have been a great win, a Dublin derby. You've played in so many for different clubs, but just how big of a win was that for Bowes?
Massive in terms of league position, I think. With Pat's couple of wins away from us, below us, like, if we needed to put more daylight, say, between us and that and them, it's always nice to win the Dublin derbies, you know. Like, obviously I've played in a good few of them, but love winning them, love playing them. It's always a great atmosphere.
Yeah, and of course it comes not only a couple of months after a massive win over Shamrock Rovers as well in a Dublin derby, so you seem to be dealing well with the pressure of those big games this season.
Yeah, you see, them games, I think they tend to look after themselves. There's no, like, the pressure is there, but it's a way that with the atmosphere and the whole occasion, you're just naturally going right and playing it. And anyway, it's a lot harder getting up for, say, the smaller games where there might be as many people at the game and the whole occasion isn't as big. There's still the same 3 points up for grabs, but when you're playing in a Dublin derby and crowd, there's a different buzz around the ground. It's just the way it is, I think, you know.
Yeah, and this spell at Bohemians, it marks your longest spell with any club in Irish football. You've been there for 3 seasons now. You must be really enjoying it. Is Bohemians a really special club to play for this season, particularly with it being the last season where Daly Mount Park will be used?
This is my 4th season, Kieran. Get the facts right.
Wikipedia wasn't the best. Sorry, Paddy.
Hasn't been updated yet. look, playing around Daly Mount, there's some great people involved around the club, like a lot of hard work goes on behind the scenes in terms of trying to market the club and advertise the club in a certain way that we're open to all kinds and folk, you know, that kind of way. So it's great club to play it.
And obviously you've won league titles elsewhere and had some great success within the League of Ireland, but would qualifying for Europe with Bohemians this season, if that was to happen, Paddy, would that be one of your best achievements?
Sure would, considering the way the Gaffer's tried to put together a team, blending young, old, bit of inexperience, the whole works. And for the group of lads that are playing there, smashing group of lads, one of the best restrooms I've been involved in, I feel, in terms of camaraderie and fellas willing to run themselves into the ground for each other. So if we did manage to pinch the European spot this year, it would be one hell of an achievement.
Yeah, and as I said at the start of the interview, Paddy, like, for a long time Bohemians were down in that kind of mini league or maybe six teams that could potentially go down. Obviously, as I said, Bohemians have pulled away from that now. You're saying, obviously, there's still points to pick up to be sure of that. But we've really enjoyed it from a neutral point of view this season, watching the situation where three teams will go down. What's it been like to play in?
It's been a bit of a roller coaster at times, because, you know, like, you could be doing well one week and you see a bit of daylight between yourself and the bottom three, and then all of a sudden two teams could get a result and you could lose, and then you're dragged back into the shit again, and it's crazy. Pure roller coaster carry on the way, way it's been unfolding. But it's one of them typical across the league. The team who's obviously most consistent will be that bit more successful, whereas we've managed to win against the bigger teams and then win against some of the teams around us in certain runs between each of the phases of the games, and it's done us really well, like, you know.
So finally, Paddy, as you said, fourth year with Bohemians. I understand you have some Longford links, so maybe could we see you in a different red and black in a couple of years to come?
You never know.
I'll pass your number on to Neil Fenn just in case.
Unless I'm lining out for Liss Ryan FC or something, you know.
Paddy, it's been an absolute pleasure. I know you're on your way to training, so thanks very much for taking the time to speak to us.
Not a bother. Look forward to hearing the podcast.
Cheers, Paddy. Talk again.
Take it easy.
Good interview there with Kieran, with Paddy Kavanagh. Did you know he was at Birmingham there for a year or so? But like many, you know, go over to England, didn't quite make the grade, and was back into the League of Ireland. But he's been a great servant over here, hasn't he?
Yeah, he seemed to be a bit hard done by there, actually, because just reading up on it, he was brought in and told straight out he was going to play reserve team football, but if he did well there, he'd get a chance. Scored a couple of goals for the reserve, seemed to be doing quite well there. And then Steve Bruce told him, sorry mate, I'm bringing in a lot of foreign players for big money, you're going to have to stay in the reserves. And at that stage, he decided to return to Irish football. But he's had a great career, won a League of Ireland Premier Division with Shamrock Rovers, played in Europe, played against Juventus, of course famously for Shamrock Rovers. So a good League of Ireland career, and as I said to him in that interview, if he can be part of this Bowes team that qualifies for Europe, it'd be definitely one of his best achievements in League of Ireland.
Absolutely. Moving on, Kieran, there was a huge six-pointer at Amund Easey. Galway 3, Sligo 1.
Yeah, so we had Julian Canny on the show last week, a Galway fan, and he spoke so positively about Galway any time we've had him on this season.
And he was delighted I tipped Sligo.
Yeah, and your prediction was looking good at one stage, John. McFadden opening the scoring after getting too much space inside the penalty area from a set piece, and he thundered one home in off the crossbar to give Sligo a huge 1-0 lead, and about 500 Sligo Rovers fans there, so they were in their element. But that didn't last too long.
No.
Gavin Houlihan, a man who's been so crucial for Galway in recent months, he beat the last man far too easily before crossing over to Ludden, who tapped it in. Then Kevin Devaney, one of the goals of the season, an absolute screamer into the top corner to make it 2-1. And then Devaney got an assist for that man, Houlihan, to make it 3-1. Galway United, huge win. They may stay up yet. Sligo Rovers, still in huge trouble.
Yeah, speaking of clubs in trouble, Finn Harps, I think they're in deep, deep trouble now, Kieran. And they were battered at Rovers, 4-1.
Yeah, well, as I said last week on the show, John, these sort of games for Harps, if they can get anything from them, they're a bonus. They have some big games coming up towards the end of the season, and if I'm correct in saying they play Drogheda, they face an out of form Derry City team, John, and of course they have Dundalk as well, who, as I said earlier, their eye may be slightly off the ball now if they're to get into a cup final, and the league title does eventually slip from their grasp. So for me, it's not all over for Finn Harps. This was obviously a disappointing result to lose 4-1, but Shamrock Rovers, they were expected to give a reaction after that EA Sports Cup final defeat in Tala, and they certainly got that. And as I said on last week's show, Gary Shaw is a man of huge importance to this Shamrock Rovers team. I don't think a lot of people would have expected that at the start of the season, but that's how it's turned out to be. He got the opening goal in this one on 27 minutes, and that was his 10th goal of the season. And that goal for me just epitomised what a target man he is. There was a couple, two or three crosses sent in towards him. He knocked them down every time, and the ball kept coming back out. But eventually, Rovers got in behind, a cross from Madden, and there was Shaw to tap in. Great striker's instinct to give Rovers the lead. James Duna then with a great solo effort on 69, and on 75 then he got another goal, another bit of great trickery inside the penalty area as he beat a couple of Harps defenders and slotted it into the top corner. And BJ Banda got a consolation goal. Obviously, Mila had made it the scoreline more comprehensive. 4-1 it ended. But,
yeah, trademark free kick, wasn't it, from Mila? It's so good from set pieces.
Yeah, and he's really picking up his game in recent weeks, and he's going to need that for the Cup semi-final against Dundalk at the weekend, and we'll speak about that shortly. But moving on then, John, so the next fixture was a huge win for Bray Wanderers, 5-0 against Derry City, as we said, as we spoke with Dan, which Dan Gorman, you'll hear that now in a moment, our interview with him. Huge surprise to everyone, that result.
Amazing surprise. You know, Derry seems to be a bit Jekyll and Hyde, don't they? When they get beat, they get heavily beat. If you remember those games in the Europa League, Kieran, where they were thoroughly outclassed, and they've been on the back end of a couple of results like that.
A big difference though between Michelin and Bray Wanderers, John.
Absolutely, yeah, a fair few hundred miles for a start, but the big gulf in class. But you know, Bray have some good players in that team still, and now that things seem to be settling down a little bit, although obviously there's more allegations at Bray. You know, they just seem to be going on a little bit of a run just at the right time.
Yeah, so just for anyone that didn't see that the highlights or missed the game, Gary McCabe threw ball into Aaron Green, who finished with a lovely lob finish after 20 minutes. Then McCabe returned the favour. He played a true ball to Green, and Green crossed it for Darren Noon to tap in. He's been in good form lately for Bray. Noon then dispossessed a loose touch by Nicky Lowe in the Derry midfield, and he played in Brennan, who finished wonderfully. And then Bray failed to clear the lines. Goalmouth scramble, McCabe capitalises it. For me, it summed up Derry on the day. They had several opportunities to clear the ball after it had come off the post, but McCabe was there to finish it. That was 4-0, and then Green with another lob finish to make it 5, and to make things worse, Aaron McInniff missed a penalty for Derry, so even the chance of a consolation goal went. What's going on at Derry at the moment, John? Just seems to be a little slump in form after such a good season.
It does, yeah. I mean, like I said before, they do seem to, you know, when they get beat, they get beat quite heavily. Sometimes the defence looks very weak, and they can leave players in a lot of space, you know. And look, I think they'll be a lot better once they get back to the Brandywell, Kieran. You know, yeah. I think the moving ground's not done them any favours. Look, they're still in with a great chance of European football, so I think they'll want to get to the end of the season, hopefully qualify for Europe and build in the close season.
But from a Bray point of view, incredible that they're still in the European chase, and we're going to speak to Dan Gorman about that now. So collecting his hat-trick ball this season between the Stripes League of Ireland podcast is Dan Gorman from Bray. It's his third appearance on the show, and Dan, thanks very much for joining us.
No problem at all.
So Dan, I actually want to speak more about the on-field situation at Bray than I do for the off-field for once. The previous two times you joined us obviously was in the midst of the whole investment saga. But obviously there is a major investigation underway at the moment at Bray, so I'm going to have to start by asking you about that. I understand there's been a couple of developments in that.
Yeah, from what I'm led to believe, there was a lot of people called Arbestown today for interviews or given certain time slots for the player staff and a few others that had to be in Arbestown for the FAI for further questioning. I haven't heard anything about that now. How it went, I'd say it's going to be a while before there's anything revealed. But it looks like, hopefully there's an outcome soon, and obviously it's a positive outcome which has already been found. We just have to hope that, I've been to all the games that were investigated, part one of them, the one in Scotland, which was a surprising result, as everyone knows. But the other four games, I wouldn't have for a second suspect anything with the players. I wouldn't for a second suspect any of them to be into that kind of thing. But I'm sure Athlone fans would have said the same thing a few months ago. So there's no way of knowing. We just have to hope and pray that it is. As Harry Kenny said himself that last week, he'd be absolutely heartbroken and good range, and if his players rubbed anything. So let's hope that's not the case.
And obviously, I'm sure both from an FAI point of view and a Bray point of view, anyone involved with this investigation will be eager for it to be concluded a lot quicker than the Athlone one was.
Oh, absolutely. You'd really have to hope that's the case. You don't want this dragging on for too long. It's a very messy situation, so they want it sorted soon, again with a positive outcome. But you'd imagine that they'll have learned from the last time with Athlone, and they'll have this one done and dusted very soon, very quickly, hopefully.
And Dan, just quickly before we talk about the on-field, is everything sorted out now with ownership and financials at Bray?
I don't think it's ever sorted out, to be honest. Look, it's stable at the minute. The money's there, the players are paid. Jerry Mulvey's in as the interim chairman. So he's been there now, it's been a month. There was a very quiet role, apart from those statements which you've previously discussed. He's had very little, public involvement anyway. Whatever behind the scenes involved, so I wouldn't be privy to that information. But as things stand, the club is it's fine, the club is stable, the money's there. It seems to be ticking over, apart from obviously the investigation of the match fixing, which is no small thing by any means.
So let's talk about some good news then. So undefeated in the last four Premier Division games, pretty much a point off fourth place in the European spot, and a 5-0 win at Derry.
Yeah, I think your tone of voice says it all there. Like, I was the same myself. And I was growing up obviously hopeful. It's a tough place to go. We've beaten Derry twice this year, both times thanks to late winners and Tim Clancy. This time there was no need for a late Tim Clancy goal because they were 5-0 up by then. But yeah, look, massively respected. And it's again massively respected. Like, I've been asking Harry for weeks, like, is it hard to motivate the players for the run in when they're playing for nothing? And he said, like, well, Europe is still there, Europe's not gone yet. And even when he was saying it, I was still kind of, I take him a pinch of salt. But now, look, if he'd beaten Limerick last week, they'd been fourth now. Or the week before, sorry, they beat Limerick, they'd been fourth now. So it's definitely on. You look at the run in, like, Derry have drawn it tomorrow, should be straightforward, 3 points. But after that, they're at home to Harps. They don't want that. That's a tough one. They're best of times, especially when Harps are fighting their lives. They're away to Cork, which by then will more than likely be a dead rubber. But it's Cork's first home game as champions, probably. So I'm sure they want to, you have a party that night and win it in style. Then they're away to Sligo, another very tough one, no matter what time of the year playing them, especially with Sligo back with their lives and on a bit of form. And they close at home to Pats, another team fighting for their lives down there. So they don't have any easy games. Even the Cork on paper could be a non-fixture, but Cork are going to be more than likely getting the lead that night and therefore will want to be showing their fans a good time. So it's very, very difficult for them. And even with Shamrock Rovers losing the Pats tonight, Rovers are looking over their shoulders now because they're coming to Bray very soon, the 20th of October. And by then, like, if Bray win that night, you just never know with Shamrock Rovers as well. So it is on, like, it's there for the taking. It's Galway at home Saturday week, 3 p.m. kickoff. Win that, put the pressure on the others, and you just never know what could happen in this league.
Yeah, and after that, Dan, Dundalk away from home, but obviously it looks like the title is gone. It won't be done and dusted officially by then, so I suppose Dundalk will still be going all out, but perhaps if they're in a cup final, maybe their eyes could be slightly off the ball. I have that Rovers game highlighted here in front of me. That's going to be an absolutely huge, huge, huge game for Bray, and it comes at the Carlisle ground, so you'd be hopeful that there'll be a massive crowd. Obviously, I think Rovers will bring a huge away following also. And then, as you said, Cork away from home is the last game of the season. Obviously, it's hard to go to Turner's Cross, but the title will be done and dusted by then. So how do you see those remaining games playing out?
Well, I think they've won at home to Galway. Like, that's the next one up, and that's the most important. Like, if that's not a win, you can kind of just, you're putting yourself out of running already. And after that, away to Madoc, as you said, the same night, Cork away to Bowes, so it could be settled that night. But still, there's also, Stephen might be passing one line to the cup semis or the final, let's say, it could be, obviously. So that's, it's never easy. We're deep enough there at the start of the year now, so it's not impossible. And then at home to Shamrock Rovers, you said, if we get a result against Galway and if we get a result against Dundalk, then that man game is absolutely massive. As you said, it's always a packed house, no matter where Shamrock Rovers go. Great fans, great atmosphere. Bray, you'd hope, we'll get the numbers on that night, and if you win there, then you could be looking, like, if Shamrock Rovers is between now and then as well, you just never know. And then we finish down in Cork, but we're hoping, obviously, then they're giving all your lads a chance and they're resting lads for the potential final, which as well, like, obviously, we need Limerick not to get through to the final and win it, or else fourth place becomes a non-event because it's not going to get cheered up. So we're also relying on that. We're kind of presuming Limerick will make it, which, no disrespect to Limerick, they're perfectly capable of getting upset, but it won't be easy on Turner's Cross, and we have to hope, from a selfish point of view, that they get beaten, so that therefore fourth place gets Europe as well.
It's quite hard to believe, Dan, considering everything that's gone on, that Bray still are in the hunt for Europe. Just in terms of if they were to qualify for Europe, obviously it would be a huge cash bonanza to the club. Do you feel that maybe the squad could be kept together then for next season and the good work that Harry Kenny is doing could be continued? Or has everything that's gone on maybe tarnished a little, no matter what happens, it's tarnished the season? What would your view be on that?
I think definitely no matter what happens, it's going to be tarnished. I think Europe would be a big carrot to dangle there, but I think maybe a lot of the players, it's probably just too much this year that they just can't commit to it. Like, a lot of them are still another year to go on the contract, so they'll be there unless there's a big come in. But for a lot of them, the contract's up, and I know from my own point of view, you'd have to definitely sit down and question it. Like, they won't be rushing to put the pen to paper, even with that Europe there. Harding as well, he could be gone at the end of the year. Or, like he said himself, the last few weeks and months, he's thinking of walking. Maybe if Bray get Europe, he's only in his first full year of management. It's hard to walk away from that in your second year of management, managing a team in Europe. Yeah, as you say, financially it'll help out, which in turn might help the players. They might say, look, well, I don't think they can afford to give more money again. But they might be able to, if players do leave, they might be able to bring in likewise and throw the money at them and please God stabilise and plan a bit better this year so that none of this happens. Again, people confuse and say the money issues. There were never technical issues. It looked like it would be, but then they were fixed before it became an issue. But it all led to the ugliness of it all. But yeah, look, it's if they get to Europe, it's a big if at this stage. But it'll be just remarkable. Like, when you consider after the whole fiasco in July with the statements and everything, and the results went to pot, like, they had nearly 10 games without a win at some stage, and now here they are talking about sneaking to Europe. When you look at all them bad results they had, if you just turned one or two of them into wins, they'd now be favourites for Europe, which is crazy considering their managers wanted to walk a few times this year, the players have wanted to walk, and now the players apparently are being accused of throwing matches to pocket a bit of money. Like, so it's just been a crazy season, and maybe the most fitting way to end it is for them to get into Europe and just throw fingers up to all the trouble they had.
Well, Danny, could well be a crazy end of season for Bray. I mean, those remaining matches, who knows, if they finish fourth, unbelievable story after all that's gone on off the pitch. I want to thank you very much coming on again, Dan. It's been an absolute pleasure.
No problem, Alan. Thank you.
The match ball is in the post, Dan. Thanks very much.
Cheers, thank you.
Good
thank
luck.
You. Okay, Kieran, so moving on to Monday night, it was the big one at the top. It was Cork against Dundalk. Cork went into the lead, Gatland own goal. Dundalk saved a bit of face at the end, got an equaliser through Robbie Benson.
Yeah, so as enjoyable as it was, John, and obviously a great atmosphere down at Turner's Cross, Dundalk ended up in the party spoilers on the night. But as entertaining as the game was, I felt the quality of football on show was very poor in this one. Cork City really rushed Dundalk, to their credit. They didn't allow Dundalk to get in their usual flow. The first couple of minutes, I felt Dundalk did have a good rhythm. McElhenney was picking up a lot of ball in the middle of the park and linking up with the wide players. But after that, Cork really imposed their game on Dundalk, didn't allow them to play. But at the same time, anything Cork did with the football was also very rushed, a little bit direct. They're often accused of that. I'm afraid it was that case on Monday night. So I think people felt, obviously Cork should have taken their chances early on. Jimmy Keohan, his chance comes to mind when he was 1-on-1 and he blazed it over. Then Robbie Benson getting the late equaliser. So I suppose you could, I'm probably going to be accused of being biased because I have a soft spot for Dundalk, but you probably could, they stuck with it. You know, it wasn't the best performance for Dundalk on Monday night, but they stuck with it. Stephen O'Donnell coming on was a brilliant masterstroke for Stephen Kenny for me. Mm-hmm. Chris Shields was playing well, but he just doesn't have that same, I suppose, guile on the ball that O'Donnell has. O'Donnell came in and he settled down what was a very frantic game, got the ball down, started passing it, and from that Connolly broke down the right. I thought Connolly had an awful game Monday night, but yep, that was the one moment of genius he's shown. He broke down, beat two Cork players on the outside, crossed it in for Benson, whose reactions were brilliant, and he beat Beattie to the ball to spoil the title celebrations that were incoming for Cork on the night.
I was looking at this as a bit of a almost like a warm up for next season, and
yeah,
getting an idea of where the balance of power might be next season. Who do you think came out of it stronger, Kieran? Would you say Dundalk?
excuse me. the one thing I noticed from this game, there was certainly a much more nasty side to it than we've seen in recent meetings. There's always been that bit of bite, obviously, with the rivalry there and challenging for titles. But there was a lot of fouls in this game. I think it's fair to say the referee didn't have his best night. Dundalk could have been down to 9. They definitely should have been down to 10. Massey was probably lucky to stay on the field. He ended up going off through injury, but he was lucky not to pick up 2 yellow cards. A couple of other challenges come to mind where the referee was inconsistent with handing out yellows. So, for me, obviously Cork are going to have a lot of rebuilding to do. They're similar to Dundalk of last season. Dundalk lost Horgan, they lost Boyle in recent years. They've lost their Richie Towles and their Pat Hobans. Cork, you'd imagine, will lose Ryan Delaney. He's going to go back to Burton, you'd imagine. Obviously, they haven't replaced Sean Maguire yet.
Nope.
They might get it hard to keep a hold of Sadler as well. There's always talk of him going across, but I think he'll probably stay for next season. So they may have a bit of rebuilding to do. Greg Bulger looks a man who's maybe not happy there also. Mm-hmm. A couple of whispers of that, and there was interest, we believe, from Waterford earlier in the season. So again, he could be another man on his way out. So there's going to be a lot of rebuilding for John Caulfield to do. I think it's fair to say Cork are stuttering over the line. They haven't been in great form of recent weeks. So there's a lot of questions still to be asked at Cork, despite their league title, which they will certainly win. So for me, whoever wins the FAI Cup, that could be a huge thing mentally this season.
Okay, fair points. and an absolute lifeline of a result in the Dublin derby. St. Pat's beating Rovers 2-0. Ian Birmingham and Paul O'Connor on the score sheet.
Yeah, Paul O'Connor with his first goal since arriving from Limerick, and speaking to a couple of Limerick fans at the time of his release from the club, they weren't happy about it.
No, they weren't.
He was a player that showed with Drogheda that he had great potential. Went to Sligo, things didn't really work out there, but as we've seen with Sligo this season, it can be a hard club for players to settle into for one reason or another. But huge goal from there against Shamrock Rovers in the derby. And as we'll hear now, I spoke to Sean Doyle, a St. Pat's fan, earlier. We'll hear that interview now in a moment. Rovers have given up 7 points against Pat's this season in the derbies, and considering Pat's have only got 33 points on the board, it's a huge chunk of that 33 points.
They get some very Jekyll and Hyde results, aren't they, Rovers? You know, I wouldn't like to be going to the bookies and putting any money on a Rovers match at the moment, because they're just really up and down.
We've been highly critical of Rovers this season on the show, and I think it's results like this. I know they're away from home and everything, but coming off the back of that heavy defeat in the EA Cup final, then they go and, you know, they have a very comfortable win over Finn Harps, and you'd expect them to carry that into a game like this. Pats, you know, all the pressure was on Pats. There was no real pressure on Rovers, but there's pressure on them now, because there's danger they could end the season trophyless if they lose on Sunday. And not only that, even Europe is in question now for them, John.
Yeah, exactly, and that's not what we expect at the beginning of the season. You know,
I'm going to throw a question to you, John. If Rovers are to end the season trophyless, and if somehow they were to finish outside of the top three or four and fail to qualify for Europe, Stephen Bradley, will he be there next season?
No, he won't, Kieran. No, that's just unacceptable. It'd be unacceptable for the board and the owners, so
yeah,
no, I can't see it. I think the minimum expectation of Rovers was European qualification.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you, John. But we're going to move on now to our interview with Sean Doyle, and this is myself speaking to him earlier on. So I'm joined on the line now by St. Patrick's Athletic supporter Sean Doyle. Sean, you're very welcome to the show.
Hey, Kieran, thanks for having me.
So Sean, an incredible run of form lately for St. Pat's, but not in a good sense. Following that 4-0 win over Finn Harps on the 18th of August, your side suffered 4 defeats in a row in all competitions, shipped 6 goals against Dundalk, 3 against Bowes, but obviously there was red cards for Pats in both of those games. But a 2-0 win on Monday night over arch rival Shamrock Rovers has put the fate back in the hands of Pats, I suppose, in terms of staying in the Premier Division. What have you made of the recent run, Sean?
The reason we're on itself hasn't been great. The performances haven't been great. They haven't been good enough. Up until the Finn Harps win, the 4-0 win, which was the end of probably our best period of the season, where we went the middle of July to the middle of August unbeaten. But after the Finn Harps game, it hasn't been good enough for the club, to be honest.
Yeah, and the remaining fixtures, a mixed bag really. You have Limerick at home up next, then it's Galway away, so obviously two sides there that are fighting for their lives also in terms of survival in the Premier Division. But then it's a home tie against Cork, and perhaps the title race might be over at that stage, so could that play into Pat's hands perhaps?
Well, you're kind of hoping that if we do pick up points against Limerick, that the league will be over by the time we get to Cork, and hopefully there's a bit of a hangover. I mean, you can probably pick up points there as well. But looking at them here, and when you're down the bottom, you know, points don't come easy. You're going to have to scrap for points. Limerick or Finn Harps and Galway will be the exact same. So there's no easy games at all. There's no way you can say you're guaranteed we pick up 3 points here, we pick up a point there. It's actually too hard to say, no.
Yeah, and considering St. Pat's only have 33 points this season, does it surprise you that 7 of those points have come against Shamrock Rovers?
It is, in a way, and it's ironic when you think about it, because we do flag them over there and never relegate them. So it's great. It'd be great if them 7 points actually did keep us up. But all in all, the form, especially the home form, we've 20 points from 42 at home so far this season. We've a goal difference of +1 at home, which, you know, for any team, especially a team that were champions not too long ago, it's a bad return. It's a bad return. Even away from home, 13 points at a goal difference of -10. You know, we are where we are for a simple reason, is because we deserve to be where we are.
Yeah, and Sean, the final game of the season comes away to Derry City. I suppose that's kind of a two-sided coin. Derry on a very poor run of form at the moment, of course, beating 5-0 at the weekend by Bray. But that's put them under immense pressure to qualify for Europe. So they're obviously going to be going all out to try and get a top four finish on that final day of the season. So I suppose it's a mixed coin for Pats.
Yeah, it's you don't want to be going into a game with the likes of Derry, where Derry are chasing something, and if Pats need a result, need a point, they need 3 points to stay up, it won't be easy. It's been a tough season for Derry as well. It's been up and down with Roy McBride and everything else that went with it, you know. So look, if we pick up the win against Derry, that keeps us in it, or we pick it up beforehand, you know, it just doesn't matter. It's getting them points on the board now to get us to safety.
How many points do you feel you need from those last four games, Sean, to really guarantee things?
It's not possible, Kieran. I'd say you're probably looking for 5 points, I think. Probably four. Four probably gets you over, but I'd say five probably be there. If you could pick them up, probably against Limerick and against Galway. Obviously, they'd be the two games that you'd be looking at. As you said, against Rovers, you know, you picked up seven against Rovers, and you would never thought we'd picked up seven against Rovers. And we dropped so many points against the likes of Finn Harps and Galway and Limerick so far this season as well.
Yeah, so maybe a case of looking to take the pressure off early with back-to-back results against Limerick and Galway. But one thing that would help in that sense, of course, Sean, is Christy Fagan. He's got a couple of goals lately after a very quiet season, only 7 goals this season. What do you put that down to?
The start of the season, he wasn't fit at the start of the season. You could see the sharpness. There was no sharpness there. His game, in my eyes, his game improved when the likes of Killian Brennan came back and the service came from the centre. But I think Curtis Vaughan's goals, to be honest, have gone unrecognised.
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
But Christy, look, Christy's the type of player where he just needs one chance, you know, to put the ball back in there. And you'd rather have that type of player in your side than against you.
Yeah, and another man whose goals have been crucial this year once again for St. Pat's, Conan Byrne. What a player, Sean.
Yeah, Conan, he's one of them players that he doesn't even look like a footballer, you know, at times, you know, and that's no disrespect towards him. It's the service he's brought to the club and the goals he's given is, you know, the goal we got from midfield when we won the league, we won the cup, it was beat nowhere else. I don't think anywhere from midfield or in England.
So, Sean, I suppose my final two questions, maybe more of a negative sense. Obviously, we're hoping Pats can secure their safety in the coming weeks, but if they weren't, Liam Buckley is going to be a man under pressure. We've associated him so much with cup wins and league titles, but this has been a season really out of the ordinary for Pat. So where do you see Liam Buckley's future?
It's hard to see Liam's future away from the club, whether it be as manager or whether it be as a development consensus with the underage teams. He's put an awful lot of graft into the club. Now I'm saying that his returns, this is his second stint, it's 5 years, he's won one league, he's won one FAI Cup, he's won, up until this season, he's won a cup every season, whether it be the League Cup, the Leinster Senior Cup, but I think his future does lie at the club, whether, as I said, whether it be as a manager of the 14 or whether it be working with the 17s, 19s and 15s.
Yeah, and you've mentioned, of course, Sean, as many Pats do, never relegated, but if this was to be the season where that run was to end for St. Pat's and they were to end in the First Division next season, financially, how big of a disaster would that be for St. Pat's, or do you think that they could come back stronger for as we've seen with some Dublin clubs?
Financially, I don't think the club is in a great state financially as it is in the Premier Division and now Europe as well, and it's going to be tough. You know, you just pray to God that we pick up the points and we don't end up with the likes of Shelburne and just rotting away and stuck in the First Division. Because with one team only coming up now, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, well, obviously, that hopefully that will change next season. But incredibly, we're coming towards the end of one season and teams in the First Division and even the teams coming down from the Premier, they don't know the structure for next season, which to me is quite incredible, but I suppose it's something we've grown accustomed to.
It wouldn't be the League of Ireland if there was no confusion involved, Kieran.
Now you said it, Sean. Sean, it's been a pleasure. Thanks very much for joining us and we're going to wish you the best of luck for the rest of the season.
Thanks, Kieran. Take care.
Take care, Sean. Good luck.
Okay, Kieran, so moving on to the First Division. We're going to leave the title celebrations to last, but we're going to talk first about UCD beating Cove 1-0.
Yeah, so the fourth time this season that game has ended 1-0, but for the first time it was UCD that came out on the victorious side. Cove had previously won this fixture 1-0 three times this season. Gary O'Neill was the man who broke that hoodoo on the 56th minute. Nothing of real consequence. UCD will finish third. Cove Ramblers will finish second. No playoffs. But UCD tonight in the Youth League, they play Molde. So obviously huge, huge best of luck and best wishes to them. And hopefully, you know, Tur is still a great achievement this season for UCD. It's just a shame that they're not going to get a chance to take that further. But I think we've spoken enough about the shambles that was the First Division this season, John.
Kieran, I think you've mentioned it every week. But yeah. We'll move on quickly to Wexford, a draw against Shelburne.
Yeah, so while it may not seem the most, I suppose, consequential result, Danny Doyle's 75th minute equaliser for Wexford does confirm that they will finish 7th in the league. They won't finish bottom. We had Shane Marin, the Wexford FC media officer, on last week, and he was speaking about how desperate Wexford were to avoid bottom spot in what's their first season in the League of Ireland. So Danny Doyle's goal in the 75th minute cancelled out James Brown's goal right on the stroke of half-time for Shelburne. And yep, as I said, result secure 7th for Wexford, so not much more to say there really, John.
No, and a guaranteed wooden spoon for Athlone, who had another absolute battering, this time at Cabo. 6 to ship today at the weekend, 6-2 we finished, Kieran.
Yeah, well, we called a cricket score on this one and we were right, John. Marty Waters with a hat-trick, which is very important because he's now the top goal scorer in the First Division.
Kieran, he won't be at Cabo next season, will he?
Well, reading an interview during the week with the Cabinteely manager, the question came regarding Marty Waters and a lot of the big names in that Cabinteely team, and Marty Waters has said that he's really enjoying it there, wants to stay there, he's really loves the project that Cabinteely are building. So it does look like he's going to be there, but he did end it with, you know, you never know what's going to happen to football. Yeah. So perhaps if the money is right, John,
I'd love him at Longford, Kieran.
Oh, and Georgie Kelly from UCD up front, he'd be quite a lethal pair, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
But Joe Doyle there were two. He's another man that's stood out very much so for Cabo this season after his move. And Ryan Swan got his first goal after arriving. He's obviously a player that had huge success with UCD. Didn't work out for him in England, but he'll obviously be hungry to prove any doubt was wrong next season with Cabinteely. Stephen Walsh on the score sheet for Athlone, and Claudio Silva got his second goal in a row for Athlone. But disastrous season there, Lizzie Willen.
Yeah, absolutely. That's another one they'll be glad it's well and truly over.
Just interesting to point out there, John. Cabinteely have amassed more points this season than they did in their last two combined.
I think that's all credit to the manager and the project that's in place there. I think the holistic approach they've got, everything about the club, they're doing things the right way, and look, wish them all the best. I just hope they finish second to Longford next season.
Yeah, so Pat Devlin's team up to fourth there. But speaking of Longford, we'll move on to that one, John. 1-0 win for Waterford at home in a packed out RC. Of course, party mode was in full swing. David McDade with an 81st minute goal. Longford maybe slightly unlucky to lose this game, but that seems to have been the story of their season. 11th goal of the season for McDade, and 1-0 win for Waterford.
Well, they kept the party on all for long enough, didn't they, for a proper celebration? But eventually, yeah, that with that McDade goal, it was just all out party time there for Waterford.
Yeah, and from a Longford point of view, the one big positive to come from the game was the performance of Aidan Durbin, making only his second start for Longford this season, and the youngster gained huge praise on social media from Longford and Waterford fans alike after the game. And with Neil Fenn's connections in the game, I'm sure he probably got a couple of phone calls regarding young A, and he's been up training with the Irish underage teams a couple of times this year.
Just going to say to you, Kieran, I think he's on the verge of selection for some of the Irish underage squads. So
yeah, so it's good to see.
Yeah, exactly. Now you have an interview with
FM Ireland. His real name is Mark Hill, but everyone will know him as FM Ireland. We spoke to him earlier on. He's involved with Waterford, and this is what he had to say on that great success with Waterford. And we're joined on the line now by Waterford FC Communications Director Mark Hill, who will be better known to you all as FM Ireland. Mark, you're very welcome to the podcast.
Cheers again, John. How are you?
So how's the head, Mark? I'm sure there was mad celebrations down in Waterford over the weekend.
Yeah, it was a late enough one. I'd say we were still going in the early hours. Well earned after a long season, but fans, players and management alike all enjoyed themselves.
This is your first season involved with Waterford FC. How does a man from the north become involved with Waterford?
Yeah, that's a good question. But a year and a half ago, I relocated down there, met a Waterford girl, fell in love, and the rest is history. And as of 3 weeks ago, I became a father for the first time. So very much change of scenery and that change of pace moving to the sunny southeast.
Well, congratulations for both of us on that, Mark.
Yeah, appreciate that. Thanks. The lack of sleep has been an issue, but other than that, we're fine. Waterford-wise, yeah, I seen an opportunity towards the end of last season. The club was in, I'd say, pretty dire straits, where, say, their average was 300 fans. Mm. And on the day that Roddy Collins left the club, when it was then Waterford United, there was a planning meeting held up in Waterford IT, which is open to the public to attend. So my missus encouraged me to go along, have a say, and give your opinion, just as someone who's an interest in Irish football as a whole. So I went along, and from there got asked to come to some follow-up strategic planning meetings, and then got asked to join the management committee of the club. Unaware at that stage that Lee Power's investment was coming, which was obviously a nice bonus at the time. Mm. But either way, the hard work still has to be put in on the ground and with the local community, regardless of investment or not.
So obviously, myself and John both also congratulations to Waterford on their success this season. We've seen this week, after they've claimed the title, there's talk of the Blues going full-time next season in an attempt maybe to push for European football. How realistic are those hopes, Mark?
I think the facilities are there, between Waterford IT and the facilities of the RSC. Like the pitches up the back of the RSC are as good as you'll see anywhere in the country. I think the playing staff are there. It would just come down to the finances and the infrastructure. But I think the potential for a club like Dundalk to go, or sorry, like Waterford to go full time, is extremely feasible. But as I said, the club as a whole can't rest on their laurels. They can't rely on outside investment alone. It'll require community backing. It'll require a different mindset from players who've got used to a part-time schedule this season. But there's no question about it. For League of Ireland football, another full-time club run efficiently and successfully can only benefit the league as a whole. And having a club come in with, we would hope, an average of over 2,000 next season in the Premier Division, fan base-wise, you know, that should be an asset to the division. So if we get it right behind the scenes and we get the chance to go full-time, I'd say the club is well set to do that.
Of course, Mark, you're a very well-known figure among League of Ireland circles, I suppose, on social media because of your work with Football Manager. And John here has been hounding me all season to get you on the show. So I'm going to turn you over to Mr. Breyer now, and he has a couple of questions on Football Manager.
Yeah, well, Kieran's right, Mark. I mean, I remember playing Football Manager when I was at university, and bearing in mind I've been qualified as a pharmacist for over 20 years, I can't remember a series of games that's had such longevity. You know, it's been a massive success story right from the days when the Collier brothers brought the game out in the first place. It's amazing. And, Mark, how did you get involved with it?
Yes, yeah, so the game itself has been going from the early 90s, back in the Championship Manager days, and I would have been 13, 14 at school and got invited round to a friend's house to play this computer game that I'd never heard of, never knew anything about. Gave it a go and fell in love immediately. Made my mum get me, Santa Claus or whoever, get me the PC for my next Christmas present, and from there it just took off. I fell in love with the game. Helped the guy who was doing the Northern Irish stuff at the time for Championship Manager, and then when it became Football Manager, I think it was back in 2004 now, I took it on as a full-time, not a full-time gig, but I took on the Northern Irish role, and then for about the last 5-6 seasons, I've done North and South, so I've done Northern Ireland and the League of Ireland as well.
And it's just got such a big game now. I mean, how many Sports Interactive that own it? How many people do they employ now for that? Just purely for that game?
Yeah, you see, it's largely voluntary. It relies on fans and the goodwill and the support of fans to input to the data. And that's what you see me on social media quite a lot, asking for feedback on games or asking for feedback on individual players. And I do get a lot of support just from the Irish football community as a whole. So employment-wise, I'd say they have a good core in their London office, but in terms of out on the ground and watching games and putting the actual core data into the game, a lot of it, or 90% of it, would be voluntary.
Okay, and you often hear lots of stories about how people have done so well on Champions, on Football Manager from, you know, with little clubs. Now, I actually won the Champions League in FM 2014 with Longford. Has there been any other great successes for League of Ireland clubs on Football Manager?
I'd say I have to admire the likes of Cavan Teely, who sort of turned it into a marketing tool, if you like. Yeah. Where they were offering free season ticket if you managed to get Cavan Teely promoted to the Premier Division and win the Premier Division. And little things like that certainly helped lift the profile of a smaller club within League of Ireland football. And I've seen other clubs use it well, like Glentoran in Northern Ireland this year unveiled the signing of Robbie McDade, the ex-Leeds striker, via the Football Manager computer game. So it's certainly, on that side of it, has been good. And then I'd say we've all probably won the Champions League with small clubs, but maybe a little bit of support from the editor rather than using the core game.
Hang on, what are you accusing me of here, Mark? Never touched the editor. That was a genuine...
Hear no evil, see no evil.
Genuine 0-0 against Atletico Madrid after extra time and a fluky penalty victory. But look, but I mean...
I'm envious in the regard that I just don't get the time to play it anymore. So I am envious if you still manage to fit in the pharmaceuticals, a podcast.
Yeah.
Play Football
Manager. So. Well, it's been a while since I've played Football Manager, but maybe I'll get going again with it next year. I don't know. Three kids, it's very difficult to find the time. But speaking about that, there's so many stories about Football Manager, but you know, and there's been books, films on it, documentaries. But
yeah.
Is it true that Football Manager was actually listed on a divorce paper?
I've heard that. I've heard it cited in several court cases. That certainly was referenced in the book that the. Oh, is it Ian McIntosh released at the time around the 10th anniversary of the Football Manager computer game? He released the Football Manager Stole My Life book, and there was certainly a piece in that, an interesting chapter in that, on it being referenced in several court cases. So, yeah, I believe that's factually true.
Well, Mark, you've made my co-host a very happy man. I think he'll probably sign a new contract for next season now with us. So, I'm going to thank you for that and wish you the very best of luck going future with Waterford and Football Manager, of course.
And the new baby. Anytime.
And yeah. The new baby, of course. Yeah. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks a lot.
Cheers, guys. Cheers.
Enjoyed the show so far? Why not drop us a review on iTunes? Is there something you'd like featured on next week's show? Tweet us on @BetweenStripes or find us on Facebook by searching Between the Stripes. Finally, our website address is www.betweenthestripesblog.wordpress.com. Enjoy the second half.
So just taking a quick change of scenery, John, we're going to speak quickly now about the Women's National League. There was huge controversy there this weekend. A game involving UCD and Kilkenny was called off because no match official arrived at the ground. Unbelievable to think something like that could happen, you know, in what is the highest level of women's football in this country.
Kieran, I've seen it under 13 GAA this season, but I never thought I'd see it at this kind of level.
Yeah, and we spoke to Jenny O'Keefe, who is a Wexford youths player. Obviously, Wexford weren't involved in this, but Jenny has connections to both clubs involved in this incident at the weekend. And she had some strong, passionate views on the treatment of women's football within Ireland. And this was my interview with her earlier on. So I'm delighted to say we're joined on this week's show by, for the very first time, a player from the Women's National League. Of course, we've had Aaron Clark from the Women's National League podcast on our show previously. So we're delighted to be able to speak to Jenny O'Keefe now, who's a Wexford Utes Women's National League player. Jenny, you're very welcome to the show.
Thanks.
So Jenny, there was huge controversy this weekend in the Women's National League. A league game between UCD and Kilkenny called off because no referee turned up. As a player within the league, you were very vocal on social media about that. Can you give us your reaction to the events over the weekend?
Yeah, no. See, Kilkenny United are my old club that I used to play with. And my twin sister Ali plays with UCD. So like, I kind of had a personal opinion to it because it's just unfair that women are getting treated like this. Like, if this happened in the men's league, like, there would be so much about it, and there's nothing about it. Like I'm pretty sure the FEI didn't even apologise to the teams about it, which I thought like it was a bit ridiculous. But look, it's kind of in the past now. But I thought it was outrageous. Like,
yeah, just from following Aaron Clark last night on social media from the Women's National League podcast, he tweeted that the FEI had commented that it had simply been an administration error. Is that good enough?
No, Jesus, no, not at all. Like, they think that putting that out there that it's going to be forgotten about, it's never going to be forgotten about. This is always going to be brought up to every single situation, events, anything that's going to happen in women's football, it's always going to be brought up. Like, just saying that is not going to keep UCD happy, Kilkenny United, or even any woman that plays soccer happy. I just think it was a very disrespectful thing to happen to the women that day.
Yeah, and from reading an interview with one of the UCD players, I think it may have been in The Sun, I could be wrong in saying that, but there is maybe small rumours going on that there could be action taken by players within the league. Have you heard anything on that?
No, I actually didn't. I seen the interview about it, haven't really heard much of it. It's just, I think the only problem that a lot of the players have with no rest showing up is that now it's going to be a midweek game that they're all going to have to get off work and all that. I just think that it's going to be hard for them. I haven't really heard much of anything from anyone else, to be honest.
Yeah, and that seems to be a big problem within, similarly to League of Ireland football, but obviously with League of Ireland players are getting paid for their time. Some teams are full-time, some are semi-pro, so obviously they have issues getting off work, etc. But within the Women's National League, there seems to be a lot of midweek games where there's extremely long distances that have to be travelled. Is that a huge problem within the women's game in Ireland?
Oh yeah, without a doubt. Like, they're scheduling like match fixtures for during the weeks, and it's just absolutely ridiculous. Like, everyone has to get off work, and sure, look, like, sometimes the work they aren't impressed about it. Mm. And luckily I'm in lifestyle, which they're very helpful for getting me off. But I know a lot of girls find it very hard that they need to find out, they have to hand in their fixtures, and then that matches being called off, and then being put into the midweek. Like, it just doesn't help them with the work, like, and especially travelling. Like going to Galway and coming back at like 1 o'clock in the morning or 12 o'clock, and then have to be up very early in the morning, doesn't help at all. Like,
yeah, and this all comes off the back of a year where the women's national senior team has been in the headlines for the wrong reasons. Of course, their treatment was absolutely shambolic. I think anyone, either male football or female football supporters, will agree. Obviously, there was an outcome to that, and a lot of the things were resolved, it seems. But for this now to come off the back of that, it must be hugely disappointing for everyone involved with the women's game.
Yeah, it was. Like, it was coming, like, I know there was a lot of problems, but they were improving it. And, like, to be honest, I thought I did improve a little bit, but now it's just going downhill yet again. And is there, like, to come think of it, I don't know if there's even any hope of it ever going to be improved in the women's league. Like, we're a national league, like, we should be treated like any other race, or, like, on the men's, like, we should be the exact same, like, and I don't understand why we're not.
And of course, then when you look across to the English league and you see such improvement there, live TV coverage, a lot of the teams now going professional, there's talk that all the top division teams will have to be professional. It must be hugely frustrating. Obviously, England, bigger population, more finances, but still they seem to be really putting a focus onto women's football, and that doesn't seem to be happening here.
Yeah, I know, like, England are doing so well. Like, there's so many girls even gone over to Scotland to play with Glasgow. Like, there's so many women even in the league are wanting to go across the waters because it's such a better facilities, better everything over there, and they have so much respect. Like, they get everything handed to them, where we don't. Like, in Ireland, it's completely different. Like, and fair enough, like, we do get our gear and all that. Like, that's a given, you're going to get it. But I just think that a lot of the thing that we don't have is even respect. Like, I just don't see it at all. Like, that we have nothing. Like, it's because we're women, we're just downgraded, like, a hell of a lot than we should have.
Yeah, and I seem to remember, of course, the Women's Cup final, the going to penalty shootouts, and the Cork City team out warming up in one half on the Aviva Stadium. That, just another sign that, obviously not from Cork's point of view, they were scheduled to go out and do their warm-up, but from an organiser's point of view, that was very shabby treatment of the women's final as well.
Oh yeah, it was. I never forget, I was watching it, and it was just shocking. Like, I remember it was everywhere, and it was just not even anything to, like, against Cork or anything, but, like, the FEI shouldn't have allowed them onto the pitch knowing that the women were in the penalty shootout. Mm-hmm. Like, I just thought it was ridiculous. Like, imagine women coming onto the pitch and in a men's final doing a penalty shootout. Like, they'd be uproar about it. Like, it was ridiculous, to be honest.
Yeah, but obviously moving on to more positive things. The national team had a great win recently over Northern Ireland in the World Cup qualifiers. So, from a senior point of view, maybe is there too much focus going on to the national team and not enough onto the grassroots, or is the improvements within the National League kind of feeding into the senior team of the National team?
Oh yeah, like don't get me wrong, like the I think well, Colin Bell, like all them are doing, they're all doing very well up there, like, and the women are putting a lot of effort, like a good few, like Claire Reardon and down with youths and all, are she's up there getting called up the whole time, and even that some of the girls went over to the student universities are over in China, like he's even bringing into a developing thing that he's bringing a few of the girls in for them to have a chance in the camp, which I think is actually brilliant, like that they're having this chance to go up there. But to be fair, like the National League, they're doing well, but it's just, I think it's just the little things that are going to matter, and like you need to focus on the little things before if you want the big things. Like if they fix what's going on in the league, like no doubt in mind that the Irish team will go out and win big things. I can see them win big team, to be honest.
Jenny, just focusing on yourself and Wexford Youths, that you're flying again this season, top of the league. You're hopeful of winning it this season?
Yeah, no, we're doing very well down in Wexford. Like, to be honest, it was a big step from going from Kilkenny United to Wexford Youths. Absolutely love it. The tempo is amazing. Like, everyone's always going, keep going again. Our focus is now to get to the Aviva and to win the league, and hopefully we are able to do that.
Well, Jenny, we want to thank you for joining us. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. Very best of luck with the rest of the season with Wexford Youths, and hopefully we're not going to see any more events like we did at the weekend in the Women's National League.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jenny.
Hi.
Okay, Kieran, so there's no league action this weekend, which means a good thing, it's FAI Cup weekend.
Yeah, and both games live on RT, which is great. I know they always do it, but, you know, as League of Ireland fans, we get so excited when there's back-to-back games on television. So that's a big positive for us this weekend.
So, Kieran, with two matches, and I suppose it's all set up for a Cork versus Dundalk final, but a couple of clubs hoping to put some spanners in the works. So, kick off with Cork against Limerick.
Yeah, well, Limerick have obviously on Friday night showed their potential to put a spanner in the works with that 2-1 win. As I said earlier on, Ogbeni absolutely terrorised Cork, and Bastian Heary seemed to have the freedom in midfield. So it's going to be a big challenge round for John Caulfield. How is he going to stop that? Will he bring Greg Bulger back into the team?
Didn't look happy, did he?
Didn't look happy at all, John. Sadler was rested for the Monday night game against Dundalk. Imagine he'll be fresh and ready to go again after having such a great first half against Limerick on Friday night. Obviously that'll bring a decision from the Limerick camp whether they start with Cotter again or whether they go with Dean Clark. So lots of selectional issues ahead of this game, and it really has the makes of an interesting tie. You know, a couple of weeks ago I think when people looked at this they would have felt it was going to be a comfortable win for Cork, but Friday night showed what Limerick can do.
No, absolutely, and to be honest, Cork haven't looked great since that Longford match, have they? You know, their league form hasn't been at all great, and I don't think there's any reason why Limerick can't create a shock with this one.
Yeah, I think the key for Cork in this game is going to be McCormick. He's going to be the man in the middle. He's going to have to stop the attacks, not allowing Henry to pick up the ball in so much space. But if he gets dragged wide having to deal with Ogbeni, that could open up the midfield for Limerick slightly. So I really do think Limerick have a good chance here. And once again, it should be a great atmosphere down in Turner's Cross with a big Limerick contingent expected to travel.
Yeah, I think Robbie Williams is going to have to cut out the mistakes, isn't he?
Yeah, I suppose it was his mistake, but Greg Bulger, his pass wasn't very precise either, so you know, that's two players that could be out of the team from Monday night's game. But as we said, so many selectional issues for John Caulfield to deal with. We haven't seen too many replays in the FAI Cup this year with the new... I don't think we've seen any yet, have we?
No, nothing yet.
So, obviously, at the semi-final stage, there is replays, and this is one of the games that could go down to it. Just on a history point of view, John, it doesn't look good for Limerick. It's their first semi-final since 1994, and they haven't reached the final since 1982. So Cork know what it's all about, having been at the Aviva the last two seasons running, and obviously winning the cup last season. But the Sean Maguire effect was huge in winning the cup last season. He scored the winning goal. He's obviously not going to be there on Friday night. So once again, it's all going to be whether Cork can take their chances, because they missed so many chances in that first half against Limerick the other night. And should they sharpen up their finishing, you would imagine Cork will have enough. But obviously they suffered the deflation then of that last minute Dundalk goal. So there's just so many different factors coming into play for this one.
Come on then, Kieran, call it.
Going to go with an upset. Really enjoyed how Limerick played on Friday night, and I fancied them to big away win here.
Okay, well, I'm going to go for Cork because I just think that Limerick defence still a bit too shaky for my liking. So we'll see who comes on top of this with that one. But
cans on whoever is the loser.
Cans on Bovril's.
Bovril's on. Yeah.
Second semi-final then, Dundalk against Rovers, and you've picked out Gary Shaw's key man for Rovers.
Yeah, well, as I said, that first goal at the weekend against Harps it showed what Shaw's all about. He's a target man. Even if he doesn't always get the ball, it causes mayhem. It just has to break the right way for Shamrock Rovers.
Yep.
And with Mealy in good form, you imagine he'll be making late runs into the box, trying to get on the end of any 50-50 balls like that.
Unbeaten in 12 Dundalk.
Unbeaten in 12 in all competitions. A Leinster Senior Cup final to come. They have the EA Sports Cup in the bag. They're going to be absolutely desperate to capture the FAI Cup. And you know, make sure Cork don't get a real dominance by succeeding with a double this season. Stephen Bradley under huge pressure after that 2-0 defeat away to St. Pat's. As we said earlier, a danger that they could end the trophy, the season trophyless, and miss out on Europe. So this is a big game for Rovers. They need to win to get into that final, which, you know, would be a backup plan should they slip out of the top four.
And will they win?
Well, despite all the doom and gloom about Rovers, they do have 8 wins in their last 12 in all competitions, and they've had no draws in that time, so I don't think we're going to see a replay in this one.
No.
But for me, you know, Dundalk will be on a high, as I said, EA Sports Cup in the bag, late goal against Cork. They really enjoyed destroying that party down at Turner's Cross. So yep. For me, Dundalk are playing good football at the moment, and I'd have to go with another comprehensive Dundalk win.
Yeah, I agree, Kieran. So Dundalk against Cork final for me, Dundalk against Limerick for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's it, folks. Another episode has flown by, episode 14. We're getting near the end of the season now. I'm going to be very sad when it's all over, John.
I know, but we're enjoying it so much anyway.
Yeah, and as I said on the Facebook Live just before we started recording here, last week was our most viewed episode ever, over 550 listeners. So we really want to thank everyone that's tuning in. If you can go onto iTunes, search Between the Stripes LOI podcast, hit the subscribe button, leave us a review if you can. That really does mean a lot to us. So just once again, thanks to everyone, thanks to all our guests that are coming on, everyone interacting with us on social media. It's been a great little run for us so far.
Thanks very much.
And thanks for the bother, John.
No problem, anytime.
And, hopefully a better result for you at the weekend with Arda.
Well, I've actually got the weekend off this weekend, so...
Sacked already.
No, not sacked, rested.
We'll leave it there, folks. Thanks very much, and we'll see you next week.
Don't forget, subscribe on iTunes or alternatively follow us on Audioboom, Mixcloud, Pocket Casts or Podcast Republic and never miss an episode. See you next week.